Laudato Jesus Christus, Vatican and World News.
Today, Tuesday, May 6th, the Church remembers St. Peter Nolasco, founder of the Order of Our Lady of Mercy. And these are today's headlines. In the 12th and final general congregation before the conclave, the cardinals discuss the qualities they're looking for in the next pope. Ahead of the conclave, the cardinals have also made a fervent appeal for peace in the world. And violence spreads throughout Sudan as the war between the army and the paramilitary rapid support forces continues. In the Vatican, I'm Christopher Wells. On Tuesday morning, the 12th and final general congregation of the cardinals took place at the Vatican. 173 cardinals, including 130 cardinal electors, participated in the congregation, with 26 cardinals speaking. The discussions focused on various qualities important for a future pope, including being a shepherd, a bridge builder, and a promoter of reform. Deborah Castellano-Lubov has this report.
On Tuesday morning, the 6th of May, the day before the beginning of the conclave to elect a new successor of Peter, 173 cardinals, including 130 cardinal electors, participated in the 12th General Congregation, explained Matteo Bruni, the director of the Holy See Press Office, during a subsequent briefing with journalists. As always, the congregation began at 9 a.m. with prayer. There were 26 interventions addressing a wide range of topics. For instance, discussions focus on the reforms of Pope Francis that need to be carried forward. Legislation on abuse, economic issues, the Roman Curia, synodality, the work for peace, and care for creation. The theme of communion was emphasized as a calling for the new pope to be a pontifex, a builder of bridges, a shepherd, a master of humanity, and the face of a Samaritan church. In times of war, violence, and depolarization, it was said there is a need for a pope of mercy, synodality, and hope. There was discussion of canon law and the power of the pope, of divisions and the role of cardinals in the church, of the proximity of the solemnity of Christ the King and the World Day of the Poor, which should be considered together, and of the need for meetings of the College of Cardinals during consistories. Other topics included Christian initiation and formation as missionary acts, the memory of the witness of martyrs of the faith in areas of conflict or where religious freedom is limited, and the urgent issue of climate change. The topic of the date of Easter, the Council of Nicaea, and ecumenical dialogue was also mentioned. Bruni also explained that the ring of the fishermen was defaced and that an appeal was read to the parties involved in various conflicts for a permanent ceasefire and negotiations, calling for a just and lasting peace. The congregation concluded at 12:30 p.m., and Bruni confirmed that no further general congregations are scheduled. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
And as Deborah mentioned, as the general congregations came to an end this morning, the College of Cardinals released a statement decrying the lack of peace agreements reached in conflict areas around the world. They focused in particular on the situation in the Holy Land, as Joseph Tulloch reports.
At the General Congregation this morning, the College of Cardinals released a statement noting with regret that no progress has been made in promoting peace processes in Ukraine, the Middle East, and in many other parts of the world. On the contrary, reads the statement, which was released by the Holy See Press Office, attacks, especially those harming civilian populations, have intensified. End of quote. The Cardinals therefore made a heartfelt appeal to all parties involved to reach as soon as possible a permanent ceasefire and to negotiate without preconditions and further delays the peace which, the Cardinals said, is, quote, so deeply desired by the affected populations and by the entire world, end quote. With this in mind, the Cardinals invited the faithful to intensify their supplication to the Lord for a just and lasting peace. The Cardinals expressed their concern above all for the Holy Land, where Israel has blockaded all entrances to the Gaza Strip since March. While pummeling the Strip with airstrikes, Israel has banned any food, water, shelter or medication from being transported into the Palestinian territory, where the UN says that 90% of the population is reliant on humanitarian aid to survive. Israel says that the blockade aims to pressure Hamas to release the hostages it still holds. Now, Gaza is entering its third month without supplies. Thousands of trucks queue along the border of the territory, waiting to be let in. Community kitchens are closing down and bakeries are running out of fuel. Families spend hours waiting in line for small portions of rice, and aid groups report a rise in looting incidents over the last week. At least some have been carried out by armed groups. Meanwhile, Israel is moving forward with plans to seize all of Gaza and to stay in the Palestinian territory for an unspecified amount of time. Israel's offensive has displaced more than 90% of Gaza's population, according to Palestinian health officials, and it has killed more than 52,000 people, many of them women and children. I'm Joseph Tullock.
Elsewhere, the war between Sudan's army and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces continues to wreak death, destruction, and displacement as it spreads to previously quiet areas of the Northeast African nation. As Linda Bordoni reports, for the third day, multiple explosions have been heard and a huge fire has erupted in Port Sudan, the nation's main maritime port, where hundreds of thousands of displaced people have sought refuge during the two-year war.
Drone attacks launched by the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces on Tuesday reportedly hit multiple locations, including a fuel depot in Port Sudan, which is a major hub for the army. A hotel and Sudan's main power substation were also struck, causing a blackout across the city. Civilians have been evacuated from the airport and the hotel, reporters said, adding that many of them are panicking as they try to seek refuge in other parts of the city that have become a safe haven for hundreds of thousands of people displaced by the conflict. The war between Sudan's army and the RSF has created the world's worst humanitarian crisis, one likely to be worsened by these latest attacks on Port Sudan, where the United Nations and other aid agencies, as well as army-aligned government ministries, have set up headquarters. The attacks on the Red Sea coastal city, which began on Sunday, represent a sharp escalation in fighting, as Port Sudan had so far remained untouched by ground or air attacks. The war between the army and the RSF began in April 2023, caused by a power struggle between the two parties over a transition to civilian government. The conflict has displaced more than 12 million people in Sudan, pushing half of the population into acute hunger. I'm Linda Bordoni.
As the cardinal electors prepare to enter the Sistine Chapel for the conclave, international institutions and world leaders continue to pay homage to Pope Francis's legacy. The European Parliament opened its plenary session in Strasbourg on Monday with an official commemoration marked by a moment of silence, as Lisa Zangarini reports.
Introducing the commemoration, the President of the European Parliament, Roberta Metsola, highlighted Pope Francis' enduring message of unity and compassion. He will be remembered for his inspiring leadership, moral authority and kindness, seizing every opportunity to speak in favour of a more humane, peaceful and united world, she said. In her speech, Metsola recalled and quoted the message Pope Francis wrote in the Parliament's guest book during his visit to the European Parliament in 2014, in which he expressed his hope that Europe, aware of its past, may look to the future with confidence and live the present with hope. While this assembly mourns his loss, we also recall his call for action and collaboration by all for a better, more compassionate and courageous Europe, Metsola said. The President's remarks were echoed by those of other members of the European Parliament across the political spectrum. Manfred Weber of the Centre European People's Party emphasised the late Pope's vision of Europe rooted in Christian identity and unity. Social Democrat Iraxe Garcia Perez described him as the Pope of the poor and the marginalized, lauding his advocacy for peace in Ukraine and the Holy Land. French Jordan Bardella of the far-right Patriots group honored the late Pope as a man of dialogue. Nicola Procaccini of the Conservative group praised his commitment to a globally engaged church, while at the same time acknowledging differing views over migration policies. According to Alice Kuhne of the Green Party, Pope Francis reminded us of the duty to overcome our indifference, while Martin Schilderwan of the Left Party underscored the Pope's defence of human rights and social justice. I am Lisa Zengarini.
Although the popes are always bishops of Rome, they haven't always resided in their see city. Most famously, for 70 years, the popes resided in the French city of Avignon. However, popes have also taken up residence in other cities, including the small Italian town of Viterbo, just 90 minutes north of Rome. The residence of nine different popes, Viterbo is particularly significant for being the birthplace of the conclave as we know it today. Kelsey Gassi tells us more.
Rome in the 13th century was very different to what we see today. Two families ruled and were battling each other over who had the authority to appoint bishops, and the city of Rome had been overwhelmed with conflict. It was ruled unsafe, and Pope Alexander IV chose to transfer the papal see to Viterbo, a city just 90 miles north of Rome. For 24 years, from 1257 to 1281, the palace of the popes in Viterbo was the residence of the pontiffs. It was here that nine men were chosen to be the head of the Catholic Church. However, until 1268, the election process was much different from today's clearly defined and thorough process. That year, the church was facing the election of a new pope. Little did anyone know, this would become the longest conclave in church history. After a year without a new pope, the citizens of Viterbo took matters into their own hands. To pressure the cardinals to make a decision, they locked them in the palace of the popes with a key, or cum clave, from the outside. Finally, in September of 1271, after more than 3 years without a pontiff, Pope Gregory X was elected. This experience in Viterbo made the cardinals realize that the long and unofficial process of electing popes was outdated. The recently elected pontiff Gregory X published an apostolic constitution, Ubi Periculum, with concrete rules for the election of a new pope. This remains the basis for the modern-day process the church still uses today. With that, Viterbo, also called the City of Popes and the location of the longest papal election in history, became the birthplace of the conclave. I'm Kelsey Gussie.
And briefly, on Monday evening in the Pauline Chapel of the Apostolic Palace, officials and staff involved in the upcoming conclave took the oath of secrecy as stipulated by the Apostolic Constitution Universi Dominici Gregis, promulgated by Pope John Paul II on February 22, 1996. The oath was administered by Cardinal Kevin Joseph Farrell, the Camerlengo of the Holy Roman Church, and was taken by all individuals, both clergy and lay, who were approved by the Camerlengo and by the three cardinal assistants. Each individual, after being instructed on the significance of the oath, personally pronounced and signed the prescribed formula in the presence of Cardinal Farrell, with two apostolic protonotaries acting as witnesses. And that's all the time we have for this edition of Vatican and World News. A reminder that we will have full coverage of the conclave when it begins tomorrow, Wednesday evening. You can find all the latest news on our Vatican News website, as well as our Facebook, X, and Instagram accounts. Many thanks today go to Alberto Giovanetti, our sound engineer in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Christopher Wells.